Hello and welcome to episode 4 of Capes and Commentaries. I'm Tyler Baker. Nathan Kennedy is here with me, and Joe Amato is here with us in spirit. Joe will not be joining us today. He's taking care of landscaping duties and things like that.
So he says.
It'd just be me and Nasty Nate taking on our, well, not going solo, but taking on a solo Spider-Man episode. The Amazing Friends are not in this series. It's just going to be the solo Spider-Man series from 1981. My personal favorite episode, Revenge of the Green Goblin.
Which one came first? Did this series come first and then Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, or vice versa?
Yeah, this one came first, and then I was trying to, because I'd read like the back history about this years ago about how, why, because I always liked this series and couldn't figure out why this was kind of dropped, but I guess they wanted to do that Human Torch Iceman crossover with Spider-Man. And then we ended up getting, you know, Firestar and the Amazing Friends, and then the Incredible Hulk took off. I think the Marvel Animation was going to make that a big deal. So if they want to push that in this new show, I guess the solo Spider-Man had to get dropped. But yeah, and this I think played in syndication some, but probably I don't think it's as much as the Amazing Friends show did, because I didn't recall seeing this show as a kid until I got it on VHS at Walmart.
Okay.
And because I was aware of the Amazing Friendship, but not this one. So this was completely brand new to me in 1992, maybe?
Yeah.
92 or 93, one of those early 90s years.
Yeah. And storyboards on this episode from your friend Larry Houston that you guys just interviewed, which is pretty neat. I like watching these now and wait until the end credits. I'm like, well, did Larry work on this one? Yes, he did.
Yeah, Larry definitely, because he worked on a lot of this stuff at Marvel around this time too, especially in the early 80s. Marvel Animation, who was responsible for this, Amazing Friends, Incredible Hulk, G.I. Joe, Transformers. So yeah, Larry dabbled in a lot of this stuff, and I'm hoping that when we share this, it catches Larry's attention, because we want Larry to come and join us for X-Men, of course, but having worked on all these other old Spider-Man shows, I would love for him to sit down on.
Yeah, no, I mean, that would be cool. Not only that, but just any of the other cartoons he worked on, that way he can, just give that insight of we were thinking this for this. And I'm sure he's got like tons of stories that he could tell involved with just the process of what they did. And, I imagine that is not, a very short, easy process to go through.
No, when you're a director on G.I. Joe, you're doing storyboards on Spider-Man. I mean, the guys are responsible for the opening sequence of the G.I. Joe movie. That's so, unbelievable levels of badass. But yeah, we hope we can get Larry to join us on some of these and give us even more in-depth behind the scenes. Because I often felt like, yeah, there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff about these shows, but dealing with someone who was there working on this stuff, personally, I don't think you get any better than talking to Larry about this stuff. So
yeah, and I imagine too that there were a lot of things where you had to deal with the toy maker as well. They'd be like, "Well, you can't do this." I'm sure there's probably so many guidelines and hoops you got to jump through just to get things approved. Sometimes I really hope that he joins us. By the way, too, like all the other episodes, we do have the link in the description for the episode that we're watching today. So feel free to click down there. If you're listening to us on Podbean, make sure you check out the YouTube channel. Just give a search for Beyond Retro. I think Doug's been starting to put a link to the channel itself in the little description on the Podbean page. So yeah, feel free to hop over on YouTube and join us that way as well.
Yeah. Our YouTube links are always up first, and then about a day later, the Podbean links are up, and we like to push the Podbean link too, because this is commentary more about the vocal than the visual. So, but we just encourage people to check out both, but definitely the downloadable link, which will be available probably within the next 24 hours after we record this. So
yeah.
But I'm anxious to hear Nathan's thoughts on this, because as far as I know, Nathan's never watched this show. So this is brand new for him, and I'm anxious to hear what he has to say. Hopefully it's more flattering than The Amazing Friends.
You know, I felt kind of bad.
Boy, once you find out Larry worked on how much you love it, I bet Nathan's listening. It's like, God, I'm a piece of shit.
Well, I mean, at least I'm being honest, right? Like, to me, I'll say it again. I just want to reiterate. It was more of, I guess, the vocal performances that was off-putting. Like, the animation's great and everything. Yeah. It's just, I don't know what happened there. The some of those deliveries, I'm just like.
Well, if you watch the 90s X-Men series, which is what you're more accustomed to listen to Cyclops and Professor X from that, and then go and listen to this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a drastic step down because the X-Men 90 series is the quintessential interpretation of the X-Men beyond anything in the movies or anything else. That is it, or any other cartoon series. So yeah, I don't fault you for thinking that Cyclops and Professor X's voices were just less than desirable, because in comparison, they don't hold up as well as the 90s series. But you know, I think it's one of the best of the best of the Amazing Friends episodes. You know, not just from nostalgia, but it's a great episode reminiscent of the Spider-Man Juggernaut storyline and Amazing Spider-Man, and it's just a fun X-Men story too. So I get it, but I still love it and don't hold some of the bad voices against it. But you know, and you're not the only one who felt that way. I know James Etock had mentioned, because he's a big fan of the series too, behind the scenes and stuff, and
yeah,
he felt a lot of the kind of one-off characters in the show, like Angelica's teacher and stuff like that, the voice is just kind of off, like random, and it makes sense. So you're not alone in thinking that. It doesn't take away that yes, the show looks great and the story's good, but hey, bad voices, as I've stressed before in other cartoons, if you don't have good voice characterizations, I don't care what kind of story you're trying to tell, it can really take me out of a good cartoon if the voices are just god awful, like they're really trying too hard to be villainous, or the hero just sounds like a real wimp.
Yeah.
Or you just get behind this interpretation. So it's important to have good voice acting. Small characters or minor or large characters, they all need to be treated with the same equality.
There you go.
How's you going to top it? All right. Well, if you're ready, man, we'll get started and watch Revenge of the Green Goblin.
Yeah, absolutely. Give us a countdown and we'll get going.
All right. We're watching this on Daily Motion, people, just as a reminder. Unfortunately, it's not available on DVD or YouTube, at least not a good quality version. All right. 3, 2, 1, play. This awesome opening sequence.
Yeah, I want to say just right off the bat, I like this opening sequence way better than Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. I also like the music.
I do, too.
In this show, it's because this came out in 81, you know, you still have the remnants of the 70s disco-esque kind of stuff. So you just got that super good bass line.
But it's very catchy. Like it says action, but it's also says this is meant for kids. But I still have a blast watching it to this day and don't feel like I'm watching a really kiddie cartoon. But hell no, I don't. I mean, I love this cartoon. It was so impressionable to me as a kid because I just... This is my favorite voice of Spider-Man, aside from Josh Keaton on The Spectacular Spider-Man. I think that, and the gentleman who did Spider-Man's voice in this show, his name escapes me at the moment, but it was just, I like it better than Amazing Friends.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there.
Yeah, I think Spider-Man has a much more serious, a little bit more serious approach, the way he's portrayed in this, whereas Amazing Friends, everything's a little bit more lighthearted, which is fine, but...
Yeah. And with this episode, it doesn't waste any time. We're like, I mean, you know, I know we're talking 20 minutes here, but still, like, it just jumps right on into what's going on. Like, just immediately, it's like, oh, okay, train wreck.
And then, boom, and we you quickly see that Norman Osborn has escaped from prison somehow, thrown from the train wreckage and the amnesia that, you know, wiped out who he really was, is now back. And right there, you realize that the Green Goblin is alive and well from that train wreck. And I always liked this too, because it took place on Halloween. You know, so as a kid watching this, I remember when I bought this at Walmart, I got it on a Saturday and watched it Saturday night, went home that night. And just, it was just a fun kind of popcorn matinee feel to watching this episode on a Saturday night.
Now, I guess I have to question here the choice of when he's swinging, that it makes the noise of whoosh, Is that something that you think that they put in there just to be like, well, we don't want them swinging and there not to be like any sound at all? To me, it just seems like you could have chosen a different way to, I don't know.
Oh, well, it's, you know, like with so many things in animation, things that may not make so much sense in real life, but like in comic books too, you have to add, there's, you know, what's the name? God, the technical term for sounds and stories that like escaping. But yeah, you don't want, it would be rather flat if you didn't have a sound effect when he's swinging around, which was not always the case. Later Spider-Man cartoons, you just would hear, you know, the web slinging and a different web being fired out. You wouldn't hear like a wind effect as you swing about, but I always thought it sounded kind of cool.
I always like this too. It's like, oh, the weather's perfect. I mean, seeing the blowing leaves like that does remind me a lot of like October.
Yeah, it's a fun episode, atmospheric, and I'm sure there's a lot of fans who, if you're familiar with this one, this is cool too. This build up of like the Green Goblin's back and just a silhouette in the way, like he's watching Peter Parker. Like, that's cool, man. No great reveal yet, building up. But this exact storyline is featured in the Amazing Friends episode, Triumph of the Green Goblin. Like, the gang going to a Halloween party, Green Goblin's broken out. It's a Halloween party on the college campus. I mean, it's the exact same story. This one's far superior, I think.
That part just now where, like, she comes and kisses him, and she's like, who's that? And he was like, oh, I wish I knew who that was. It's like, damn, man, that, like, your girl's right in front of you, and you're already, like, wanting to mess around with someone else.
It's like, well, Betty just shows, like, look, he may be, you know, puny Peter Parker to some people, man, but Peter Parker, when he got older, especially in the comic books, man, girls like Peter Parker.
And this is a cool little tease too, where it's like, we're just fucking with you.
Yeah, and I bought a hook, line, and sinker. I'm like, oh my god, Green Goblin showed up at the party. You know, I bought it as a kid when I first saw that. So yeah, it's, if I'd have seen this in '81, I'd have been right there, front and center, believing everything. It's almost like he's acknowledging you. Yeah, I'm out, Spider-Man. I just, this is when I get excited here, because I really like coming up here when he breaks in and then takes the costume off and the music kicks in, like the Spider-Man, like it's time for Spider-Man. I always thought it was so cool.
Now, do you know who did the voice for Green Goblin in this show?
Oh, God. I remember reading about that in Serial Geek magazine about who did the voice, I believe. But I can't place her up. This is so cool. I just think this is a great epic moment here. But no, I can't place it, but I dare say it's one of the best, if not the best, voices of the Green Goblin. I mean, of all the incarnations, I think he's been the best, the gentleman that does his voice in this.
So it wasn't a guy, because there was part of me that kind of thought that it sounded like a female that was doing the voice.
No, it was a guy, and I believe it was the same guy who did him in the Amazing Friends episode, too. It's a little bit different, but it's the same voice. But this one is very menacing. I like it better than the one that was in the 90s series. Spectacular Spider-Man nailed him pretty damn good. And then I don't really recall what he sounded like in the Spider-Man Unlimited series, at least their version of the Green Goblin. But when I read Green Goblin comic books, this is the voice I think of. And this is just cool. I mean, everything's played serious. It's not played for jokes or silliness or anything right now.
This is no yuck fest.
It is no yuck fest. Why can't Infinity War be this serious?
That's still stinging a little bit on you, huh?
It is. I had to repeat what I thought about it so much while I was at work this week, and people were just laughing at how angry I was getting. It was just like, it never failed. No matter how many times I was asked about it, I still get just as pissed off.
So Spider-Man has been hit with this ray that's just going to debilitate him for about an hour.
And this, I mean, just, I really like how Marvel Animation captured the look of the Green Goblin, you know, I mean, the look of him from the 70s, the 60s. I mean, it's everything from the how his cap is long and wavy, the scales on his outfit and everything. I mean, it's very Romita.
Well, I mean, when I think of Green Goblin, like, that is the look
that
always comes to mind, you know.
That face used to kind of freak me out as a kid, like his devilish smile and big eyes, like, it's kind of creepy looking.
I mean, I can understand why Willem Dafoe got cast in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man.
I think Willem Dafoe could have been a really good Spider-Man. There could have been so much good, but God, it was just the costume, the dialogue. I mean, so many things. And I know it's got an awesome following. The film still does. People love those Tobey Maguire movies. I get it. But man, I just felt like they missed it. And I loved it when it first came out. I adored it. But like with so many videos, when the hype dies down, you see it on DVD, you're like, oh God, this movie's not as good as I remembered.
Yeah.
And all this, it's just fun. All these details of Green Goblin's backstory here, and introducing the kids as to like how he became who he was, everything, their feud, what he can and can't do.
Do you think the helmet's okay though? Is that...
Yeah, it's fine because it's changed in Triumph of the Green Goblin. Like this memory amplifier is used in that episode too, but it's more like a kind of a ring that kind of lays down on the head as opposed to like a helmet. And this is like right out of Amazing Spider-Man. Damn it, the issue escapes me too, or the epic reveal of Green Goblin to Spider-Man and that two-part storyline. Or they duke it out in battle. Of course, we're not going to get that aggressive as it does in the comics. I feel like such a putz not having those two issues memorized right now. God. It's like, how do I call myself a Spider-Man fan when two of the most quintessential issues I can't remember?
The steel trap brain is failing him.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't
happen too often.
It feels like when I must remember something, that's when it fails me. When like no one cares what I have to say right now, that's when I can't forget anything.
It's only when we're recording.
Yeah.
And it's out there for the world. Thought he was a true fan? No.
Yeah. I'm just one of those hipster guys like, yeah, man, I got this sweet shirt of Hot Topic, man. I'm a Spider-Man fan too. Yeah. To me, it's an old episode, but it's everything was done so well. And when I watch this, it's not strictly on nostalgia. It's like the quality of this episode was so good. And I that's why I feel like this is the best version of the Green Goblin we've gotten. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are like, what are you talking about? Sam Raimi's is so much better. I'm like, well, you may think that, but I don't roll my eyes during the confrontation between Spider-Man and Green Goblin in this.
I got flashbacks to Dumb and Dumber where she's like, hey, are you in there? And he's like, yeah.
Yes, I'm in. I'm just screaming.
So now he's like, oh, if I can just reach this.
And I remember as a kid watching this, I found Betty Brant to be kind of irritating because it just felt like she was making things harder for Spider-Man. I'm like, shut up, lady.
Yeah, she seems really clingy.
Yeah.
And really, like, really jealous, too.
What's that?
I said really jealous, too. So I guess it's kind of like an accurate portrayal of how some girlfriends can be.
Yeah. And given that for this series, Betty Brant is kind of played off as, like, the main squeeze for Spider-Man in this show. You know, yeah, you would have her be portrayed that way, you know.
Which is kind of interesting that they chose to do that instead of, you know, your Gwen Stacy or, you know, your Mary Jane Watson.
Yeah, and it's kind of odd that they never really pushed or tried Gwen Stacy, really, until the Spectacular Spider-Man series, which if she showed up in the 90s series, which I'm proud to say I don't remember a whole, I mean, I remember a lot of the episodes, but I don't recall if she ever showed up. I don't think she did. It's almost as if like they felt like we can't do this character because we know we're going to have to kill her off at some point or something like that. We're not going to do that in a children's cartoon. But they wouldn't have to kill her off just because she died in the comics. Same thing with the Green Goblin. Just because the Green Goblin died, or at least the original Green Goblin died, doesn't mean you can't have, you know, 4 or 5 seasons worth of Green Goblin stories.
Right.
But yeah, it kind of makes you wonder why they never... I guess because she died in the comics, let's just not worry about that and... Why Mary Jane wasn't put in the show? I mean, Mary Jane wouldn't show up to the 90s series, and she didn't show up immediately, from what I can recall. It was like Felicia Hardy and I'm trying to remember who else, but you know, Black Cat would show up in this show. You know, Doctor Doom, Doctor Octopus, Kingpin, Red Skull, I think. I'm pretty sure. But
now, here is one thing in the episode that I am kind of like, well, I mean, he knows who Spider-Man is. Why not just find a way to get that printed in the paper instead, as we're going to see here in about like a minute and a half. The papers just disintegrate. So I guess the line of thinking there is that, you know, people won't want to buy it because it's a print paper.
His motive for that is, you know, his career was ruined because of Jameson publishing a lot of negative publicity about Norman Osborn. So he's trying to kill two birds, you know, in the same night. You know, it's more about, with Spider-Man, it's more personal. Like he wants to destroy him personally and not worry about exposing to the masses. Whereas Jameson exposed Norman Osborn to the public. So I'm going to shame him publicly and take care of Spider-Man personally. At least that's how I look at it. I mean, yeah, you would think that, but then again, too, I see the Green Goblin more about like wanting to hurt Spider-Man personally all the time. Anything that he would do, it would be to hurt Spider-Man personally, you know, like through Gwen Stacy or, you know, Aunt May or something like that. That's where like the things he would do wouldn't necessarily be public humiliation.
At least I like how that doesn't fit on his head that well.
Yeah, yeah. And this coming up here, this little cameo with the lizard, because I hadn't seen the lizard episode until I was an adult.
Yeah, that was a cool thing. It's like, here's that time I fought the lizard. So cool.
Yeah, it was a nice little throw-in.
But yeah, no, the way that you worded that makes me take back what I said. Sometimes you would think, like, just the logic behind it. It's like, well, he could have just put that in the paper and have it massively produced. It's like, oh, Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
Yeah, and it's...
But who would believe him, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, when they find out that the Green Goblin is put in there, you know, and people, you know, Peter's done a great job of playing up the fact that, you know, even though people wonder where he gets the pictures, no one would ever believe that this kind of generic college kid is arguably the most powerful man in New York City. You know, this is the most powerful superhero in New York. You know, the guy that's taken on the Hulk and God knows, I mean, so many people.
That's a cool little shot right there, that like zoom out of them with the buildings and behind them too.
All this. I mean, it's just a fun action sequence.
Yeah.
That's why I feel like this series, I mean, you know, and maybe people don't like the series as a whole. I don't know why it's not remembered as fondly as Amazing Friends. You know, I think people always remember Amazing Friends because of a lot of the cheesy aspects and nostalgia. But this one, I feel like, is often forgotten. Like, I never, ever, hardly ever see anybody mention this show at all. I mean, not an episode, not the fact that there was a solo Spider-Man series, or if they do, it's like a cliff note. It's just right. Kind of, oh, yeah, there was one before, but Amazing Friends is what it's all about.
I really like this part, too, where, like, he gets in there, he's like, all right, and then... Here comes the cop. It's just hey, what are you doing here? I'm writing you a ticket. Who do I make this out to?
Yeah, just like nobody's above the law, not even Spider-Man. But that's how Spider-Man's written too. It's like Spider-Man may stop everything, but at the end of the day, he's still dealing with, you know, some of the most ridiculous problems and has to just take it. Bite his tongue and take it. That's what makes Spider-Man such a great character, that when the mask comes off, he's still got to come home and deal with the fact that he blew off Mary Jane or Aunt May was worried about him and he didn't bother to call, and has to come on face all that, even though he saved the entire city from Green Goblin.
I'm going to go a little Brody from Mallrats. Like, he's got a cold. I wonder how long that would last for him, you know, since he's got like...
Yeah. You kind of wonder, like, you know, Spider-Man has been sick in the comics. He's dealt with injuries and stuff like that. I think for storytelling purposes, he kind of deals with it just like anyone else, even though you think if you would break it down like Brody would in Mallrats, what could his immune system handle a common cold to a point where it wouldn't affect him as much? But obviously,
I bet he would get over it pretty quick.
He would, but I almost feel like the common cold is so relatable to know that Spider-Man has a cold and he's still got to take on the Scorpion and the Rhino in a random team up and is struggling to breathe because he's got a bad cold, makes him relatable a little bit more.
Jameson's always been one of my favorite characters in like any iteration. And he's always been
portrayed quite well too. And all the incarnations from the 60s show, this one, the 90s, Spectacular, and even J.K. Simmons in the Sam Raimi films. I mean, he's a character that's been played perfectly. I mean, I always liked whoever was cast to play his voice, but they always picked the right guy, I felt. I love Goblin's glider. I really do. And I'm not opposed to like the old broomstick that he had in like his first appearance.
I like how Jameson is just like, he's so angry that he just dove out the window to try to get it's like even then he's still like and then loses his grip because he's still pissed and he's like, I'm gonna like shake my fist at you.
But he'd rather just assume drop all the way than have Spider-Man save him. It's like no one messes with Jameson and his money here.
Well, even in this part right here, he's like, I know the identity of Spider-Man. And he's just like, oh, you do? Tell me. And then he's like falling and he's just like, he doesn't care about anything. He just wants to put it into Spider-Man.
And that would be the character. Like, that's something very true to the character. Like, that obsession of finding who he is and just shaming Spider-Man any chance he can get. And this is fun. Crash in the garbage. What did you say? I said. And then clangs the trash can lids together.
Yeah.
It's just fun. And the animation is so great.
Yeah.
I mean, with the hat blowing in the wind, the malice in his face. It's just badass. That's why the Green Goblin's always been my favorite Spider-Man villain. Just visually, he looks awesome.
And then crashes into this tanker.
And I don't want to hear any people bitching about, hey, why has he got a business suit underneath his Green Goblin outfit? Because they couldn't put a naked man on children's animation. So, which as a kid, I used to wonder, why is that? But you soon realize they can't draw a naked man on 1981 children's programming.
Well, I guess they could have done something like put him in a pair of boxers or something.
I guess. I mean, because they did draw Submariner in both this one and the Amazing Spider-Man. And
now, this run is a little goofy. You have to admit that animation was a little bad. Well, not bad, but just...
I mean, it did stand out. It's kind of like, it seems a little off.
But it's like 2 seconds, so...
Yeah. And the amnesia kicks back in, and... Who is it? Who is Spider-Man? He is! Like, no argument there. This is just a brilliant cartoon. I mean, this cartoon does such a great job of playing all these characters great. Nothing's done. I mean, as you're watching this, or your first time watching this, I mean, did you see anything cheesy? Did it, like, make you roll your eyes at how everyone... I mean, it's a simple story.
No, it is definitely better than the Amazing Friends episode that we watched last week.
Yeah,
infinitely better. Like, the voices are better. I honestly feel like the animation's way more polished, too.
Yeah, I like this a lot. I've probably watched this episode more than any of the 80s Spider-Man shows. I loved it. Everything. The story, the characters, the voices. I just thought it was perfect. I mean, they really captured everything.
Oh, yeah, and she finally got her Halloween gift.
She got her Halloween gift, and Spider-Man gets a kiss at the end, man. It's a perfect story.
Then if you guys are continuing to watch the credits, if you, right here when it says storyboards, get to it. It should be the next one, maybe. Yeah, storyboards. There he is, Larry Houston.
There, our man Larry. Yes, yeah, so if you don't know who we're talking about, we've interviewed him twice about his work on the He-Man mini comics and once about his work on all of the sequence Marvel production.
That was always like one of the coolest things.
God, that was so cool back then, man. I'd like to see a Spider-Man series that looked like that.
Yeah. You know?
That'd have been pretty badass. But yeah, Larry Houston, who worked on this and all the other various shows, I mean, we've interviewed him 3 times and we're hoping to get him on here for some commentaries to do a various ones on Spider-Man, X-Men, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, just anything that he worked on that, like, I would honestly, if he would pick like his favorites that he worked on. Yeah. I would love to sit and watch those with him, and just he can just sit there and talk about the entire process the whole time, and we can just stay quiet for all I care. I think it's neat that you found a way to just like you reached out and found someone that's worked on so many things, because he was involved with Ninja Turtles as well, wasn't he?
Worked on Turtles, in an ungodly amount of shows in the 80s. I mean, I worked on Pirates of the Dark Water, the Spider-Man, the Swamp Thing animated series, which I enjoyed as a kid. I know there was two RoboCop cartoons, and with him working Marvel Animation, I'm assuming he worked on the RoboCop series at Marvel Animation as well. I'm pretty sure. But yeah, he's worked on so many. He worked at Filmation right before He-Man got started. And then when He-Man was in its inception of Filmation, he was there. So I assume he was there during Tarzan and Black Star, and a lot of the other Filmation shows too. So, he's seen and done a lot and loves his work and he likes to talk about it. So I really hope we can get him on and just say, go.
And yeah.
Listen to him. I don't want to say anything. Just...
We'll have to butt in a little bit, because you gotta. I'm sure you have like tons more questions that you can ask him about certain things, like specific little details of things that happened in these episodes that we'll end up watching with him.
Yeah,
but I'm really looking forward just to talking to him, because I haven't been able to do that yet. He's just been on Fans of Power with you guys, so
yeah.
It'll be good to be in the room.
Yeah. I really hope we can. And he says he wants to do it, so it's just a matter of getting it scheduled and everything. And he's a busy guy. He's getting back into doing comic books and, getting back into working in the comic field and stuff like that too. So he's going to be a busy guy. He does comic book conventions and stuff like that too. Yeah. So we're hoping to score him for. Hopefully, when we get him, we can just sit and record like a bunch of commentaries with him at once, like maybe two or three episodes all together.
Yeah.
That way we have like three in the bag, like one Amazing Friend, one Spider-Man, or all three X-Men. I don't care. Whatever the man wants to do, hopefully we can get him to.
Yeah, no, that would be really cool to do that. I really hope we can get him locked down for that sometime soon.
Yeah. No, that's what I mentioned. I was like, we want to be able to do it because it's he's so busy, it's hard to get him scheduled. So hopefully we can get him for at least three episodes to record.
Yeah.
And that way we've got three commentaries with Larry Houston to put out. Just have him pick if he wants to do all three X-Men or one of, one G.I. Joe, one Spider-Man, Amazing Friends, whatever. I mean, we'll go back and revisit Firestar Was Born because he's a big fan of that episode.
Too. Oh, man. Oh, no.
Yeah. We'll just put a sock in Nathan's mouth and he can just sit and like.
That'll be the funny thing, because you guys can just bring it up of like, oh well, he fucking hated this episode.
I ain't gonna do that. I won't do that. Larry comes on. All we're gonna do is just celebrate, his work on there and all everything that he worked on, because knowing that episode was written by three people, like three acts, three different writers.
Yeah,
and everything. Pretty interesting. But now having that episode, are you sold on the solo Spider-Man series?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We can definitely keep watching more of that.
Yeah. Definitely like to do Doctor Doom Master of the World next when we come back to this series.
Yeah. And speaking of the next episode, next week might be a little tricky. We haven't quite figured out logistically what we're going to do here. If anything, next week's episode will just be, Joe and myself.
Yes.
Because Tyler is going to be on the road to go one-on-one with Jaws. He's going to be driving down to the beach. So
be looking to save, local children from being devoured by Jaws himself. So, I'll be playing Quint, Roy Scheider, and Matt Hooper all on the same vacation there,
Yeah.
Also, I'll have to save a kid, and then I'll look out to sea and give him this, like, cold stare. I'm going to kick your ass, Jaws. Just like Roy Scheider did in the first Jaws after the man in the estuary got eaten and his son was attacked. I love that scene. So badass in Jaws.
As you can tell, Tyler's like extremely eager to talk about Jaws on Beyond Retro podcast.
I can't wait, because I really want us to do all four films. And Jaws 3, Yeah.
Oh, you're going to love it. Jaws 3 is going to be a lot of fun.
It will be a fun to talk about, but I feel like because of discussing that at some point, I will have to sit and watch it just because.
Yeah.
And it's such a hard movie to sit through. But not the other three. But yeah, I look forward to doing that. I almost felt like with Beyond Retro, like, while I'm at the beach, we ought to discuss Jaws.
Yeah, we'll run it by Joe. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to it at all.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know what Joe and Nathan will decide for next week. They may, I don't know, you guys can, I don't know what you guys would want to watch.
Yeah, I mean, there might not be a Capes and Commentaries next week. So we might see you in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah. Figure it out.
And, you know, we still got to dabble in Turtles. I figure if we do Turtles, we got to do the first episode, Turtle Tracks.
Hmm.
You know, like the very first 80s, or go back to do some more Batman, or almost feel like we should kind of wait on X-Men unless if we get Larry locked down for that one and not tackle X-Men until we get Larry.
Yeah, but, that's fine.
But if that's going to be a while, we can always kind of dabble on that too. But yeah, Turtles, definitely like to do some of that too. That we've got a large Justice League is another one, like Injustice
for All. Absolutely.
Yeah. So we'll figure that out for our listeners of what we're going to do next. But we want to keep mixing it up.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of this. We don't want everyone to, we want to bring everybody to the fold. Batman, Spider-Man, Turtles, G.I. Joe fans. We want to bring them all to the table here. So, but you got anything else to say about this episode, man, or ready to wrap it up?
Yeah, no, I just, it is way better than the Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends. I enjoyed it way more. Way more. Man, I'm going to feel so bad. I can't believe that's like one of his favorite episodes. Oh, man. Yeah. Larry, if you're listening to any of these before you come on the show, I will apologize to you right now.
But just remember, Larry, he didn't like the voices. It's not like he didn't like the story.
Yeah. I love the animation and the story. It's just those voices, man.
Yeah, and I can understand that. But, yeah, hey, Juggernaut was performed well. So was Spider-Man, Iceman, Firestar. You know, even Wolverine's Australian accent, you know, was, you know.
Yeah. Well, what can you do?
No.
But no, this was a lot of fun. Joe, you were missed this week. But
yeah, we'll be back for next week. And, and if not, I guess it'll be another 2 weeks unless me and Nathan put together something else and do another episode or whatever the case may be.
We'll figure something out. We always do.
Yeah.
But as I said before, go ahead and check out all the other videos. Check out our Beyond Retro podcast every Sunday at 2 o'clock. I'm trying to remember the times, man.
Yeah,
2 o'clock like,
on Sundays,
we do this at 1 and then we do that at 2. And I remember Emily was like, What time are you doing that? And I got confused for a second in my head. Like, I psyched myself out. And I'm like, oh, shit. Is it time to do this now?
Oh, and, hey, if we have to change time, we have to change time. Stuff comes up. People do things. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Typically 2 o'clock, but it will not always be set in stone at 2 o'clock. You know, we're three guys. We got our own lives. We got things we got to do, places we got to go.
Yeah.
You know, chores had to be taken care of. You know, so it's we aim for the same time, but hey, it won't always be. We always aim to get it out to people so they can listen to it. You know, I think once they get accustomed to it, you kind of feel like, oh man, what the hell's the problem? They didn't put a new episode this week. I get pissed off and put out episodes.
I mean, we've already had a few people like, oh, what, is there no show this week?
What about tapes and commentaries?
Oh, well, just Beyond Retro, it's happened before. It's like, oh, you guys not doing anything? It's like, no. I think when we had that little break when I was sick and then I upgraded to the camera and the new mic and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't do anything for like 2 weeks. People are like,
Nice to know that we're missed.
Yeah.
Well, when we have to go away for a while. But we try to keep all three shows going relatively frequent and hope people can continue to rely on their addiction to the show for our market of listeners. So we thank you for taking time to listen to our commentary on Spider-Man. Hope we inspire you to go on a Google search and look up, you know, more episodes to watch or screen caps or information about the show, or just go down a big rabbit hole of Marvel animation from the 80s, you know, from Spider-Man to Pride of the X-Men is another one we'll have to do.
That's a definite, because that's based off of like one of my favorite beat-em-ups of all time.
Yeah, Yeah, sure is. Which we did find out from Larry, that was not consulted about any. It was just kind of what Konami just saw that and just took all that imagery from that cartoon and put it into the video game. Because I asked them about that, like, what's the connection there? And as if like there was like a big consult, like was this a big tie-in like with the cartoon and the game? And it was not as, you know, it was just kind of coincidence or what they just chose to use, as opposed to like it was going to be this big launch for X-Men toys and this and that, and it just all kind of fell through. Like, nah.
I think probably the X-Men would be an excellent episode to do with Larry if you wanted to do it.
Which one?
Well, just that Pride of the X-Men, that like that.
Yeah, that's something too, because I you know, that was his first like solo attempt to work on the X-Men, and you know, until the 90s. So yeah, I mean, I'd like to discuss that one because I like it.
Yeah.
I know he, you know, he was very happy with the 90s series, but I like Pride of the X-Men a lot. I've watched it a lot. It's a fun pilot episode that really sets up what you're going to see in the show. And when you play that game, you kind of feel like, okay, this is what almost makes you feel like what we would have gotten more of, you know, with characters like Nimrod showing up and Wendigo and Mystique and things like that. And it just kind of, oh man. Because I think it would have been such a great show had we got more of that X-Men series, I thought. But anyway, that'll be this week's episode, and we'll be back with...
We'll be back with something.
Yeah.
If it's next week and it's me and Joe, or if it's the week after and it's all three of us, or it's just me and Tyler again, or whatever. It will be something, and it'll... probably be something different than Batman and Spider-Man, maybe.
Yeah, I like to say, yeah, maybe, possibly Turtles. I guess I'd like to bring Turtles into the mix, too, like the first Turtles. So I think that'd be fun to do.
Well, there you go. Ninja Turtles. If it's not next week, it'll be the week after.
Yeah. One of the other guys. So we bid you farewell, and we look forward to hearing from you if you have any thoughts, and we'll see you next go around.
Yeah. Thanks for watching and listening.
Later.